Those who hunt monsters are all too familiar with the vampire, that most cunning breed of undead. Humanity likes to think of itself as the apex predator. The thought of becoming food for something stronger and smarter than us provokes a visceral discomfort. Some steal breath, and a few sap the emotions of their victims. But most can only slake their hunger with the hot, fresh blood of their fellow man. To call it hunger does it a disservice. The fire of vampirism burns far hotter than a human soul, capable of animating a body forever. And so, the craving for fuel is profound. Its only rival among the living is the pain of the most unfortunate addicts, and the vampire feels its fury with every sunset. Sir Anthony Rhys Wood knows it can be managed, but such successes are rarely documented. No matter their prior innocence, a gentle child, a loving mother, the agony transforms all but a blessed few into feral killers. Hello everyone, we are here today to record some Phobos Signal. We are an actual play podcast telling queer stories of mystery and horror. We are back after a little bit of a hiatus, just some travel stuff, some scheduling stuff, and on the actual podcast and some production issues. It turns out the summer heat cooks machines and human brains alike. But we're back. We just put out episode 3 yesterday at the time of recording, and we are all really, really excited to get into episode 4 today. I am Thursday Garrow. I am the GM and host here of Phobos Signal. You can find me on twitter.com, still unfortunately, at Callie_Keftiu, and I throw it to my players now.
Hi, I'm Ida Ailes. You can find me on Twitter and other similar websites at Deverine.
Hi, I'm Bryce Sovereign. You can find links to all my socials and everything I do on the tabletop and video game spaces at wergazelle.com.
And I'm Celine. You can, for the moment, still find me on Twitter at lapis413. I do gotta say, thank you for everyone who's listening.
That's really true. It has been a really positive surprise to see folks not only give it a shot, but keep up with it. So I have been not obsessively staring at our analytics page, but I check in on it every so often. And more than the numbers, which are, again, surprising for a brand new thing, I love seeing that we have some folks kind of all across the globe. We don't have any listeners in Asia yet, so I don't know if we how we fix that, but I think pretty much everywhere else we've got at least one or two. So that is quite fun for me to see.
Yeah, it's really neat.
We, just for a quick refresher of what we saw last time, made some really good progress on the Limehouse Lurker. Actually came face to face with the little vampire at one point. And it did get away after killing a poor barman, but you've learned a lot about it. All sorts of interesting clues have cropped up. And if I remember right, we had some chatter last time about hopefully aiming for a big confrontation with that vampire today. Other than that, we've just introduced last time the creature of Cremorne Gardens. This is the story of a kind of waterfront sort of like theme park that's being allegedly menaced by a fish man. Letitia went by to give it a look, came across a Beulah Thrum, a lovely lady who had been menaced by the fish monster and seem to be kind of enchanted by its song. The two of you had a rather violent altercation with the again, alleged creature at the end of that last episode. I think the only other thing to go over is we had run into our lovely neighbor, Vice Admiral Thaddeus Flagg, unknown to Hargrave House yet, but the mastermind of our campaign. So, busy, busy, busy stuff, Hargrave House being pulled in lots of different directions right now. And unfortunately, I have yet another to pull you in, as during the top of a day phase, we get to introduce a new threat. Our new threat today is the Whately Camera. The Hargrave House Library contains research on the so-called Whately Camera, one of the first wet plate type cameras ever produced. People who are photographed by the camera have been known to disappear without a trace. An American scientist and philosopher, one Atticus Whately, studied the camera for a number of years and proposed that it was some sort of entity, a demon or even a god, and that the people who went missing had been transported to another dimension. Whately advanced an idea called the Fragrant Void, a sort of proto-Earth that existed in near-total darkness, that was home to powerful entities who were banished by God on the first day of creation. He believed some of those entities could still operate in our world, hidden from view, perhaps through common objects like the camera. While his research couldn't prove the existence of the Fragrant Void, he did manage to show how the camera caused people to be whisked away to another dimension. Unfortunately, before he could present his work for review, he was killed, his notes were destroyed, and the camera went missing. 1 week ago, a beautiful actress, Penelope Levy, disappeared. She was last seen at the Society Obscura, an exclusive and secretive club for wealthy photography enthusiasts, located in a converted townhouse in Kensington. A missing actress wouldn't merit attention from Hargrave House if not for the fact that her lover, Bert Broadswell, sent the hunters one of the pictures taken of her at the Society Obscura. And now I get a lovely little prompt for one of you. Who has the cosmic passage marked?
Looks like that. I might.
I think that is, yeah, just Ashling. So once again, my friend, I've got a lovely prompt for you here.
All right.
Something unusual about the photo of Penelope confirms it was taken with the Whately camera. What is it?
Well, that's a good question.
Keeping in mind that this is old-timey photography, so it's got that kind of ghostly, silvery look to it. It's on a big plate.
Yeah. Huh. I think when you look at this photo, at first, when you look at it head on, ordinarily, it looks normal, as any photographs of this time do. But if you sort of tilt it and let the light hit it in a different sort of way, whoever is photographed, like the subject of the photo, will be making sort of a face of anguish, almost like those... You know those old stickers that you can, like, tilt and stuff and the image changes to something else?
Yeah, it's got, like, kind of a holographic effect.
Yeah.
That's really fun.
And I think in this case, it, like, smears out into, like, this anguished, terrified face.
Excellent. Well, you have the rare one-of-one holographic Penelope Levy card dropped through Hargrave House's mail slot with, I presume, a letter from Bert. Laying out some of the facts of this here. But unfortunately for Mr. Broadswell, other things are afoot. The last time we were here, Letitia ran home with a Beulah Thrum in hand. And I'm curious how much time we think has passed. Do we want to pick right up just, you know, the morning after that? Do we want to say a couple days have passed? Do we want to lean into the little hiatus we've had and say it's maybe been a week or two? What are we thinking?
We have a vampire situation.
We do have a vampire situation. A pretty pressing one.
I don't think we're idling.
I think this is probably next day. Yeah.
So, in that case, what happened to Miss Thrum? Did you send her packing? Is she in a room somewhere? I'm curious what you did with that poor girl after you both sprinted out of Cremorne Gardens together.
Yeah. Probably I would have taken her back to Hargrave House for at least the night and then sent her back home in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Maybe a promise to follow up or something.
Yeah.
That sounds reasonable, yeah.
In that case, I think we're probably good to go ahead with something we talked about a little off mic, which is that aforementioned vampire problem. Mm-hmm. Y'all have made some pretty good progress on the Limehouse Lurker. You've answered the initial question. It is definitively an old vampire, indeed a very ancient one. It seems to have been witness to the bulk of London history. And we've got, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 clues on the Limehouse Lurker currently. And so that's enough to try and locate its nest with a +1 if we wanted to hop right into trying to answer that question.
That's pretty good. Or at least decent.
Yeah, I kind of like those odds. I'm not going to lie.
I'm very much down for that.
Excellent. So, when the hunters have an open, freewheeling discussion about the answer to a question, once they have a number of clues equal to at least half its complexity, roll plus the number of clues incorporated into the answer or explained away minus its complexity. As mentioned, this would be at a +1 if we can use every clue. The currently available ones for the Limehouse Lurker are a missing book about ancient Egypt. This was stolen from Sir Anthony Reed, Letitia's contact for certain things of historical and strange import, including a lot of occult weirdness. Sir Anthony also reported to have seen strange gatherings of dogs and wolves in the city. Cassidy had fresh blood drip down onto his face in the apparent basement where the Limehouse Lurker had been beneath the Dog and Whistle pub previously. Pythagoras, the haunted dog, shared with Aisling a vision of a hill fort from the earliest days of London. And I don't remember where we saw the painted mural depicting the Sons of Another World. Was that also Pythagoras?
Was that graffiti on a wall?
So I don't know about that one, but the hill fort actually happened during the what's it called?
Oh, that was during your vulnerable scene.
Move, I guess.
Yeah. That's right. That was a vision from the spirits, and then Pythagoras gave you the painted mural depicting the Sons of Another World.
Yeah.
So, an exciting mix here from a variety of sources between spirit sex, haunted dogs, and actual investigating. But this is, just to recap our question, if the vampire is old, where is its nest? Then you can resolve the threat by infiltrating its nest and destroying the vampire.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I have a pitch. It is a bigger swing than we have done before.
Uh-huh.
Maybe this vampire lives in another world and comes here to hunt.
Interesting.
I think the vision of London's earliest days, a simple hill fort, I don't think that's actually the earliest days. I think that is another version of London that never became anything more than that, an abandoned fort that is the vampire's lair. The Sons of Another World, that one, I think, is just pretty obvious. I think that's just Pythagoras seeing a glimpse of it. The missing book about ancient Egypt, I don't recall, Thursday, if you said a particular, like, what that book was. But
in the moment, I believe I called it a French first edition about underworld mythology. I think now that that's actually over-egging it, because the whole point of clues is that's something you would get to decide. So you can tell me what this book is on more specifically than just ancient Egypt.
Well, I think that's still okay because, you know, I have not personally read much in the way of ancient Egyptian religious texts. I imagine they don't have a lot of this, but in fiction they do, which is like, you know, this is the kind of book you'd crack open if you want to figure out how to go to the underworld. Or at least some people would think that. I don't actually know if that would do it, but maybe there is something in this book that we can use to kind of open the way back. And then I think that the dogs and wolves we can just kind of use to track down maybe where the vampire last was. But like I said, that's also a bigger swing. We certainly do not have to do that. But we were getting some stuff about, you know, other worlds. So I wanted to mention it.
That's true. Yeah, I don't know. It would be hard to incorporate that the Sons of Another World otherwise, I guess. So that would definitely be a good way to use that clue.
It's like it's that or it's the painted mural is something in the vampire's lair. Like there is that mural in the lair. I could see that too.
I guess the idea I was sort of picking up on was like a little more mundane, I guess, which as an alternative, we could say the location where this hill fort was could be where, you know, today stands some kind of museum. You know, it could be a Egypt-focused museum even, or perhaps in the basement or something, the vampire has its lair. But, you know, I do like the big swing of the...
Yeah, I think it's just a question of do we want to go big for our second resolved mystery? Do we feel like we want to, or do we want to reel it in for a little bit longer?
I'm perfectly happy to follow my players' leads here, and the idea that this conversation is involving Letitia say perhaps it's going through some kind of gateway to another world is a really charming thought, regardless of which direction absolutely. We take.
Yeah.
yeah. Like, I feel like it could be fun. I'm definitely always, I guess, personally drawn to slightly more mundane scenarios, but, like... I'm also conscious of the fact that we are playing The Between.
Well, and true to that title, I think perhaps we can straddle the two ideas. The thought that London has built up over time over wherever this vampire used to recognize.
Yeah.
And perhaps in the depths of its lair, with the aid of things like ancient Egyptian underworld texts, which I cannot be prompted to talk about. I will just derail this whole podcast for an hour. But suffice to say, there's absolutely some magic spells that could be of use for passing between bits of the underworld. And so I'm okay with that sort of middle ground of things are probably going to get kind of unreal and weird once you get in there.
That's fun.
Yeah, I think I like that.
Yeah. I'm done with that.
Letitia absolutely starts interrogating about the details of this vision with the hill fort, and then breaks out a map of London and goes at it with some tools,
yeah, and then breaks out a map of trying to Roman London out, and is overlaying it.
Yeah, just trying to figure out where the hell this could be.
The only clue that hasn't come up here is fresh blood dripping down from a high place, and I know we've already sort of like it was explained in the moment. It came from the guy being killed in the pub upstairs. But I'm curious to contextualize it. Maybe that could be where this entrance is. Maybe actually it was coming out beneath the dog and whistle.
Oh, maybe.
Especially because that basement also is where you had the previous clue, the Romans drawn on the walls of the cellar doors.
Yeah.
And so it seems like maybe that was this vampire's origin point is, you know, some kind of little warren beneath the dog and whistle.
That's fine.
That makes sense.
Explains why it's been hunting in that neighborhood.
It does make sense, yeah.
Alrighty, so just to recap, if the vampire is old, where is the vampire's nest? Our answer is an ancient entrance built over by London's development beneath the Dog and Whistle pub in East London. And we think that perhaps parts of this nest could even be a gateway to another world. Excellent. Who would like to roll answer a question with a plus one for me.
Does anybody particularly want to?
You, maybe. You should do it. You've been the one who, you know, brought up the idea of the other world.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. All right.
Yeah. You take the responsibility of the role.
Or the glory. It could go well.
Oh, yeah.
All right, 2d6 plus one.
Yep.
That's it.
Oh, my God.
Woo-hoo! So.
Well, well, well.
On a 6 minus, the answer is incorrect, and the keeper reacts. This is treated like any other move in the between, so I'm going to tell you what the consequences will be. And then answer a question is slightly different from every other move, in that if everyone marks a mask, the result can be averted, but everyone has to mark one. And so it's expensive.
Oh, that's pricey.
So the answer is incorrect and the keeper reacts. In this instance, the three of you rush over to East London, back to the now abandoned pub, as no one wants to go there. The owner was gruesomely murdered in an inexplicable crime. And as you're poking around a dusty and quite mundane basement cellar, one of you does find, heaped behind a stack of crates, what was this gentleman's name? Lawrence Chesterfield. This was the fidgety fellow running that workhouse for orphans. His throat has been torn out. His corpse is completely bloodless and pale, twisted in agony and pain and terror, and soaked in blood, quite daintily placed over his heart, is the little Hargrave House business card that Cassidy gave him.
Whoops.
As it seems that the Limehouse Lurker is on to you, Hunters, and is taking actions against anyone you've interacted with.
Hmm.
Oh.
Unless everyone marks a mask.
Well then, I would love to mark a mask, personally.
We probably gotta. Yeah.
I guess I could maybe mark a mask.
Excellent.
All right.
Does anyone have anything we want to go over right now, or are we going to check back on these afterwards?
I
could have mine, because we've discussed them all, but I don't think I have to do it now.
You tell me. I kind of like the idea of if we get little moments with everyone before descending into this little underworld.
Yeah, I think I'm fine with that.
So, Leticia, it sounds like you have your mask picked out?
Yes, I do. I have marked the mask of the past again.
Excellent. You want to share with the class?
Yes, sorry. I'm doubling back to see what we talked about on it, because I have...
Right.
I went through and kind of gave a brief summary of my thoughts on all these, so I was just trying to find where I stuck them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen so many people be like, I just can't hang with having to improv my flashbacks in all these Brindlewood games. And it's like, you can't write them. You can't just pre-write them. Nothing breaks if you do that.
Yeah, we kind of agreed it was probably a good idea to pre-write mine.
Oh, so, for the Explorer, absolutely.
Yeah. So the mask I have marked says, narrate a flashback to when your village suffered an atrocity at the hands of the Explorer. How did you help inflict this atrocity? And just as a reminder, my masks of the past are not from the perspective of Leticia. They are the perspective of another character that we have thus far only called the boy. I think this flashback is the boy is woken up in the middle of the night. The camp he is staying in is full of activity, inappropriate for this time of night. He is not in his village. He has been staying with Leticia, who comes to get him as he's woken up and asks for his help with something. He is brought into another tent. She does not say much to him, but says it's an emergency and that she needs his help with something. And unknown to him, but more obvious to the viewers, there's clearly some sort of ritualistic setup on the ground. There's candles, there's some probably some other stuff. I don't have all these like components of this in mind, what it would look like, but it is sort of at its center is a map of the region of his village. And as this progresses, what we see gets kind of blurry, it gets sort of muddled and mixed, but he very distinctly remembers Letitia handing him a quill made from the feather of a bird that he has never seen in his life, and having him scratch an X over the spot on the map where his village should be. And he does not really know what has happened until the next day, but he can feel in that moment that he has done something terribly wrong.
Horrible. Thank you, Letitia, the brave explorer for the crown.
Woo, lover.
Woo.
Alrighty, what about the rest of you? You got your masks picked up?
Yeah, I think I do. I have marked the mask of the past. The narrator flashback to your young adulthood that shows the incident that made you start to resent, even despise your parents. I think we are flashing back here to, you know, young, beautiful Sarah Carver. I think being presented at like a debutante ball. They did this back then, right?
Sure.
You know, being presented to high society as an adult. And it's like very obvious, like she fucking hates this, right? Despises every moment of everything that is happening here. That's kind of it, I think. You know, she's being shopped around all these various like high society people making these introductions as like someone she doesn't want to be.
Mm-hmm. A far cry from Cassidy's current circumstances.
Uh-huh.
Alrighty, Aisling. You have your mask picked out?
I think the mask I'm going to pick is also the mask of the past. It's only my second mask of the past. And this one says, narrate a flashback to your childhood that shows the first time you encountered a dark entity. We see Aisling, a young little girl, just 6 years old maybe. Really, really long, straight ginger hair that's like so long for her body size that it's like she's wearing some kind of sheet over her head. She is home when she's not supposed to. She was supposed to be in school, but she's snuck home and wants to just stay sort of hidden under her bed and read a book. But as she sneaks into her tiny little bedroom that she ordinarily shares with a lot of siblings, she suddenly hears a noise of something fleshy and far too wet, making a sickening cracking noise outside the window. And this window leads out into like a little backyard sort of area, normally pretty shaded and dark. And she can't help herself but go up to the window and peek outside. And what she sees is the lifeless body of some kind of man in a suit laying in a pool of blood. And staring up at her is her aunt, as well as a being standing behind her aunt, towering over her, glistening dark like some kind of fish from the bottom of the sea, but without any distinguishable features. And that is the first time she encountered a dark entity.
Charming.
Mm-hmm.
And with such cheery thoughts on all of your minds as you cross this threshold, I think part of that failure does hold true. I do think the poor headmaster is the sign that you have instead found what you're looking for, as his corpse kind of decorates the entrance. It seems the vampire is aware that you are coming, and at least had the time to go find itself a snack. I'm going to paint the scene here. I'm going to keep making my poor players improvise. as you head down into this really dusty, ancient, and I imagine pretty claustrophobic, as again, this thing is the size of a small child. These warrens are not a fun place to be. happened. I'd like to hear from each of you. What's another detail, other than just the corpse, that you're on the right track? What shows you that this is the vampire's nest?
I mean, easy one for Cassidy to spot, I think, right? There are tracks here. There's passage through these tunnels. Marks, scrapes on the walls, like imprints in the ground.
You little bloodhound, you.
I think I don't think it's quite littered, but I think as we go, we keep seeing broken toys on the ground. Dolls with their faces smashed. Probably like, I guess, tops. There's something like a top, I think, that's you probably would have had that broken in half. Just stuff like that. Just more and more as we keep going.
And I think there starts to be a smell that is like undefinably like noxious in a way, but with a tinge of just like sickeningly sweet.
Excellent. And so with this almost rot-like sweetness filling the air, and maybe a couple of broken toys crunching underfoot. Also, there's no like flashlights, so who's holding the lantern here is a useful visual detail for me. It sounded like maybe Cassidy was towards the front.
Cassidy, probably, yeah.
You rocking the pulp hero combo, you got the revolver out and the lantern in the hand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know.
The kind of hubris that has killed so many Call of Cthulhu characters. And as this path corkscrews and wanders and the air begins to grow colder and colder, it opens up into a kind of atrium, a larger chamber. I think two things catch your eye in here. The first are hewn rock steps seeming to move up towards another entrance. And I also believe in here is Alice Beale tied to an outcropping of rock, gagged, looking quite frightened and pale. So you've arrived in quite a scene here, Hargrave House, as poor Alice Beale, you know, strains against her restraints and screams muffled through her gag. Seems to be in one piece. She's disheveled, but other than that, seemingly intact. But I think I'm immediately going to ask Aisling for the, I'll be nice here and say the day move still. What are you afraid is about to happen?
Have we seen the vampire, or is it currently out of sight?
Currently, no. You've seen traces of it everywhere, but it has apparently set up a path for you all to follow towards this lovely bit of bait.
I am afraid that we have walked into some sort of trap, and we're going to end up in the same position as Alice.
I think that's certainly possible. And how are you trying to tackle that? What are you trying to do here?
You know, that's a great question. I feel like that's not really something I solve with composure. I can't just be like, yeah, I feel like it has to be that I'm actually actively looking around for the vampire, which I do fear might be a reason, which is just great for me with my minus one.
Excellent. So you're trying to ignore Alice Beale for the moment, focus on what you're here to slay.
Oh yeah.
Go ahead and give me that reason with disadvantage for the trust of Alice Beale, as even through the gag you think you can make out she's trying to say your name.
Fantastic. Okay. Alright. So that's a 3 total. That's a failure.
That is indeed quite the failure here.
Yay!
You're kind of frantically looking around. Your fellow hunters are there with you, you know, snooping through every alcove they can see. And Cassidy's lantern goes out. It is pitch black in here. And other than the sound of the three of your breathing and Alice Beale still making a lot of awful little muffled panicked noises, you all are in the fucking dark. What do you do?
Unless
Unless
I don a mask.
Ooh, we're getting spendy today.
Oh, we are. Yeah, absolutely. And I think I would love to cross out the moss-covered gate.
Ooh, let's go.
And this says, tell the keeper to put the coven in play. The keeper should immediately frame a scene showing that the coven has arrived in London.
Phenomenal. Give me a moment. I wasn't entirely sure if I'd be looking at this today or not.
Yeah. Well, we can also potentially do this after a break or something.
Sure, we can do that. We don't have to interrupt the flow of this scene. Yeah. And so I think what happens instead here, Aisling, is you are you know, peering and prodding, and the flickering light from Cassidy's lantern casts weird, sketchy shadows. And the ground gives way underneath you in one of these little side alcoves. Suddenly you are skidding and sliding on your skirts as you vanish down kind of a little trap door that was set up for you. And now only you are in the dark.
Yay.
The rest of you, Cassidy, Letitia, you hear perhaps a yelp as Aisling goes skidding out of view down a horrible little vampire dug trap door.
Yay.
Oh yeah, dude. You hear just like, oh fuck.
Yeah, a little burst of red hair as whoop, yep. down the hole.
Oh damn it all.
Alright. Cassidy, Letitia, I'm very curious. There's a poor victim here. Your lovely companion has just been whisked out of sight. Hopefully not to just a crushing death by falling.
Hopefully.
What are the two of you up to here?
Well, one of us actually needs to get her out.
That seems like a good idea.
Would you...
I guess I could maybe at the very least maybe take that lantern over and see if this hole lands in like horrible spikes or just kind of a soft bottom or...
I think, yeah, let's check the hole out and maybe see if we can release Alice.
It kind of slopes down and turns sharply, almost like a playground slide. So it seems like, you know, perhaps possible to crawl back out of, but seems to go down a fair ways. It's a shame this vampire is just a little while too early for actual playgrounds. Would go absolutely fucking crazy in the play place.
I think Cassidy just like, well, are we going in after her or?
It likely came up another way. Perhaps we could find that.
Well, perhaps we could. Let's get looking then. I guess we're gonna poke around.
Alice in the background is.
I will release her.
This is the most transparent trap of all time, Letitia. What are you afraid is going to happen here?
I am... this is a fun one. I'm afraid she's a vampire. I'm afraid she's been turned.
Ooh. Delightful.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
I'm happy to let that one ride, I think. Go ahead and give me composure here, as you can't help but wonder that she does look a little pale and... Maybe part of this trap is more complex than just there's a lady here.
Let me think for one second. I'm looking at what my bonuses might be.
Oh dear, and you are bloodstained, my friend. That's going to cause problems with potential vampires for sure.
Well, this is maybe not where I would have loved to spend it, but I think I will. I do have it anyways, but I think I will actually draw my cutlass here. And I will be mechanically using it to help cut the ropes. And also as like a... I already have a weapon at the ready in case she has turned. I will still, of course, retain this. I would love to keep a sword through the rest of this everything. But I will expend the mechanical benefit for it now.
It's also probably a little comforting to have your old service weapon in your hand again.
Oh, yes.
Alrighty. Go ahead and give me... This is composure, right? This is trying not to lose it while you're afraid a vampire's going to pop out.
Yep. Okay.
Just barely a mixed success. And so I you hack through her bindings here, these sturdy ropes. and with a bit of hesitation, pull the bit of cloth gagging her out of her mouth. And she kind of slumps into your arms. She's pale. She seems almost feverish. And you do see not the torn, murdered, ripped out throat of the previous victims, but two tidy little incisions, little bites on her neck as she slumps into your arms here, Letitia.
Well, that's not great.
I think she's kind of shivering and shaking. And she says, please, I don't understand. I feel so cold.
Does Letitia know anything about how vampires turn?
That's a Letitia question, I think. Mm. Also, are you letting this consequence ride, or are you just... Is this a second mask for you also? Are we really just burning up our characters today?
I don't think I can burn that many masks. I got stuff to do with my masks.
That's rough for you, lady, but I got shit to do. Ugh.
I'm double checking to make sure I have no way to spend the REC on this. I don't think I do.
I think short of declaring the one that gives you a bunch of cool weapons.
That it doesn't work. It's dusk phase only.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I think we might have to let it ride and figure this out on the flip side.
Cassidy, something looks wrong with this girl as she is trembling and shaking in Letitia's arms here, and Letitia's making a face you don't like the look of. Aisling. Cassidy.
I was just saying, I think Cassidy's play here is recognizing this was obviously a trap and getting ready to fucking shoot anything that moves.
We'll come back to that as the gun starts swinging around. Aisling.
Yeah.
You are. I'll be nice and say unharmed majorly by the fall, just your pride and perhaps your butt. But you are in pitch darkness. You are alone. You maybe hear the muffled noise of, you know, your comrades calling after you down the hole. But you are in a bad, bad place right now.
Oh, boy. Okay. Yeah, I assume I probably don't have any kind of lantern or light, really. Short of, like, some matches, but I feel like that's not necessarily going to cut it.
If you want to pitifully light a single little match in your fingertips, that's still, I can allow that in the fiction, but it's going to be the night move in here, whatever you try to do.
Oh, man. You know, that's a, yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. I might want to bring out a little bit of a ritual, perhaps. That is probably what Aisling tends to reach for when she is in danger. I'm just looking to see what effects I can get here. Oh, I would love to gain the power to see in the dark. That's probably going to be helpful.
Oh, that would be really handy, yeah.
Yeah, which, you know, is I would count as do one thing that is beyond human limitations. So I think in lieu of, like, scrabbling around or trying to light a match or anything like that, I'm instead going to just sort of concentrate and try to mentally reach out to these dark entities that, you know, even if they were standing right in front of you, me, I probably wouldn't be able to see them right now, but still trying to reach out to them. That, I presume, is going to be a sensitivity roll.
Yeah, I mean, this is still Rites of Salt and Smoke, so I won't hit you with the night move on top of that yet, but this might get a little nasty. I am going to, however, continue hitting you with the Trust of Alice Beale.
Yes, that makes sense.
Like, it is hard to focus on this ritual as you keep thinking about how terrified she looks up there.
Yeah, absolutely. Alright, I'm going to roll then 3d6. Take the lowest two, 6 and 4.
Whoa!
Add on 3. That's a 13, baby.
That's crazy.
Whoa.
Yay!
Holy crap.
Yippee!
God damn.
Well, first off, I guess I unmark the cosmic passage. There we go. And increase my reason by 2.
Here's our spare mask.
Oh, it says, ignore this result if your sensitivity is 3.
Oh, you're so right. I can no longer do this.
Yeah, well, you've already gotten the max out bonus from that, but we can still roll that into the fiction of this ritual here.
Yeah, so, you know, it's all good.
What was the effect you're reaching for? You wanted to see in the dark?
Yeah.
What does that look?
That's basically it, yeah.
Does anything cool happen to your eyes? What does this ritual look like?
Oh, man, yeah. I mean, I think, let me just look at our safety tab here. Eyes.
Always promising.
Eye injuries. Yeah. Okay, so we don't have anything to do with eye injuries marked. This isn't too gross either. I just think Aisling's eyes, if anybody saw her right now, they would see her with, like, a heavy, heavy stain of ink around both eyes. Kind of, I mean, not even, like, if she did, like, you know, goth makeup too much. Like, it's more than that, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's gotten into her eyes as well, so they're just, like, red and, you know, flooded with ink. It looks bad, but she can see.
Yuck. And I think what you see here, sorry, that's a bad habit. I'm trying to break myself of the I thinks.
The curse.
What you see here is the lurker. Again, this kind of disheveled, long-haired, blonde child dressed in rags. And it's kind of perched up on a rock on the opposite side of this little chamber you've slid into. And it's just curiously staring at you as now you can meet its gaze, and it seems interested by this turn of events.
I think I'm just kind of frozen staring at it for a second as I try to think about what the hell I'm going to do about this.
Cassidy, Letitia, Alice Beale begins convulsing, just violently shaking in Letitia's arms here.
Huh. That's not good.
Is she all right?
No. I think it's done something to her.
Something you can undo?
She's clutching at your clothes, Letitia, and her grip is enough that fingertips are punching through fabric and digging through flesh.
I'm trying to figure that out.
It's down here, everybody. It's down here.
Excellent news from the hole, as Aisling reports what she's found, and Alice Beale is...
Wow, don't call her that.
I think Cassidy's stepping over towards the hole and is like, so you think you can manage this, or...
Not really.
Oh, I meant to Letitia.
Okay.
I also parsed that as Cassidy yelling down the hole. Can you handle it?
That, yeah.
I was like, that is a weird question. Yeah.
Quiet quitting at Hargrave House.
I'll figure it out. Go help Aisling.
Yes, ma'am. I think he's gonna hop down the hole.
Wee.
Catholic, probably.
Excellent. I want to follow Cassidy here. Cassidy, action hero. You slide down this hole with your gun and your lantern drawn, probably blinding the hell out of poor Aisling for a moment when you come around that corner.
Oh, yeah.
And much like a cat, this thing's eyes glint when the light catches as it snaps its head to you. Cassidy, I think it flings a little clawed hand forward, and you become very aware of your blood.
I need that.
And it starts trying to go. It starts trying to leave. It starts trying to move. The stuff in your veins and muscles is sort of tugging at you with alarming force as it's starting to intensify very quickly. What do you do here?
The only thing the lurker is getting out of Cassidy Carver is going to be lead, I think.
Fuck yes.
Ever seen one of these before, shithead? Bang.
I think I would like to shoot the vampire, please.
I think you can absolutely try to shoot the vampire here. You've got your handy-dandy little lantern, so do we think that's worth the day move, or is confronting a vampire in the darkest pit of its nest still the night move?
It's outnumbered.
It is outnumbered by one mortal, yeah. Let's be mean here. Let's say it's still the night move. Yay. This is the confrontation with the monster. So what are you afraid is going to happen here?
What am I afraid is going to be? That the bullets will do nothing to it.
Oh, that it's bulletproof. That would be so fun. I think it's actually worse than that. The way it's kind of telekinetically grabbing your blood, it might be able to grab the bullets too.
Unpleasant. I have fastest gun in the West. I will be marking my 1851 Colt Navy revolver to do this with advantage.
Fuck yes. Woo. And is this vitality or composure here? I'm so, like, muscling through having your blood grabbed. I think that probably is vitality here.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good, because that's my good stat that's good. Okay, so let me remember how I use this dice bot.
No one knows.
Okay, that's just the dice.
So that's 10 plus 2 is 12, right?
That's a 12.
Hey,
yeah. Check it up.
That's pretty all right. So what does a 12 on the night move do here? You do what you intended or hold steady, and the keeper will tell you some extra benefit or advantage you receive. Ooh, that's quite fun, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think I'm going to think on that for a second, as I want to cut back upstairs in the biggest scare quotes ever. Letitia, what the hell are you doing right now, as it seems like this girl is having something between a seizure and an apocalyptic fit of vampire hunger?
I am desperately trying to rack my brain about what I know about vampires. I don't think this is the first time that Letitia has been in a situation that has involved vampires. Mm-hmm. It is probably the first moment she has been in the situation in this context where she is the hunter. Probably before she has been more on assist when stuff like this has come up. So I think she's trying to rack her brains and remember what people said. If there's something you can do for the victims, or if this is just like, gotta get rid of them.
Mm-hmm. And is that's your move here? Is probably a reason roll then?
I think she's also trying to sort of in the middle of this is like trying to talk down Alice as best as she can and see if she can extract herself from her grip. That's what we see happening. But yeah, mm-hmm. I think the major thing is just the reason roll probably.
Cool. You are tragically clawed and bloodstained here. I think at least one of those is going to come up. As you're in a lot of pain and looking and especially smelling like quite the prime meal right now. Oh, a meal for Alice Beale. How pleasant. If you take another condition, that's what it's going to be.
So the funny thing about masks that I've realized is it's almost better to just spend them when you're done with the roll. So I will be seeing if we do that, 3d6, take 2 lowest, plus 2, because this is reason.
Mm-hmm.
That's a 7.
A 1.
That's a 7.
That is a 7. I'm so curious, what does success here give you? What is a cure for a potential young vampire?
I mean, I think it is probably I don't know if there's any fully getting out of this, but there is, I think it's something like a flashback to someone she was working with at the time. Probably somebody else who, I don't know if we ever see them, but that might be visibly recognized as a member of the Royal Explorers Club. And maybe they mention that, a vampire's first feeding is important. and that if it can be done under, like, some kind of controlled circumstance, or like it's not just them going feral on somebody, then
right. that it kind of shapes like, their future feeding. Yes, that's really like, fun.
If the first one goes okay and is under control, then they can live with it and be a relatively normal person. They just have to drink blood. Is kind of what she's remembering.
All right, Letitia, this is the recollection you're having. That it's very important to treat a fresh vampire with care and respect to potentially shape their immortal life. And as you feel near death and in a lot of pain, you're wondering how best to help poor Alice Beale here. I think for this for the seven, I am going to give you the condition, a meal for Alice Beale, unless you don a mask here. That would be your third. This would be fatal.
Oh, that will be fatal. Okay, so I do need to don a mask regardless. Okay.
I believe that's how that works, right? It's not at four. It's at three.
Is it at four? I thought I've had three conditions before.
You had a lot of conditions in
during the haunted house.
Yeah, let me look.
I thought it was a situation where once you had like a certain amount of conditions, marking any like getting more conditions required you to mark a mask instead.
It's, Celine has it. It's up to three conditions. If you'd ever take a fourth, you instead have to mark a mask. So you can take a third condition here.
I think this condition does not make my situation dramatically worse. So I think I'm going to do that.
Yeah. Tell us about you feeding yourself to Alice Beale here.
It's a great question. I think it is partially like having to like break out some of that plus one vitality that she has and just like hold Alice down. Like she's not getting away, but between like talking to her and like pushing her onto the ground, she's able to be like, just hold still for a second. I'm going to give you something that will help. And I think probably cuts her own hand intentionally with her blade and will let some of her blood drip into Alice Beale's mouth.
Phenomenal. Further down below, these rounds slam into the Limehouse Lurker, who in fact cannot telekinetically stop bullets in midair, but instead gets a torso full of lead. And earning us...
I bet it really thought it could.
Earning us a much coveted harm to children content warning on this episode. as a fair bit of blood blows out the back of this thing, splattering on the cave wall behind it. And it's not gone down, but obviously that did not feel good. And seeing that you are a much nastier threat than it really wants to deal with here, Cassidy... It's going to spring for Aisling instead. Fangs out, claws forward, is leaping to, let's do something more fun than just raw physical violence. I'm actually going to walk that back a little. You shoot this thing and it flops onto the floor. It's in a lot of pain, and it's only after a moment you realize that with the blood that's now leaking out of it, it is tracing with one little clawed fingertip some sort of symbols or glyphs on the wall with very particular intent. And Aisling, you would recognize the sudden chill of a ritual being worked anywhere.
Oh. Huh. That's not good.
I think it resolves into little... There's a feather, there's a bird, there's a pair of arms. These are Egyptian hieroglyphics that it's tracing on the wall.
Interesting. I think, can I tell, I probably can't tell what kind of ritual this is, given I don't really use Egyptian hieroglyphics to, perform rituals.
So I don't think you can read what they say.
No. I feel like it might be a matter of just stopping it from doing this as quickly as possible.
Yeah, how's Aisling going to stop it?
Well, I'm not going to run over and stab it. Because that's not going to work.
I think that's a great idea, Aisling. You should get really close to it.
Mm-hmm. I think instead what Aisling is going to do is sort of walk behind Cassidy a little bit and point out to him, like, you see that? Right on the wall. Gotta do something about that quick. It's doing some sort of ritual. And I think I want to point to, like, a part of a hieroglyphic and try to tell Cassidy, like, which part of this this ritual inscription needs to be destroyed, perhaps with a bullet, in order to, like, stop it from being cast. Like the root glyph or something like that.
Mm-hmm. I do think this will probably be the night move here, Aisling, as you're trying to identify which part of the ritual to target. What are you afraid is going to happen here if you get it wrong or you falter?
I'm afraid that the spell's going to go off, or the ritual is going to, you know, take effect.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not going to be able to stop it.
I think it's worse than that. I think killing the lurker will do nothing to undo the ritual. And I have some horrible news for you here, Aisling. Part of me thinks this might be... Well, no, it's magic, so I guess it wouldn't be reason. So I'll still let you have sensitivity.
That makes sense, I think.
Especially because you can't read this, and so you're going off of magical feel more than anything.
That's true. I mean, it makes sense potentially for it to be a reason because I'm also having to explain it to Cassidy.
Oh, I do like that. Maybe that is the problem. Especially,
yeah,
the two of you are not exactly the king and queen of reason here with Aisling's minus one and Cassidy's impressive zero. So, I think it is reason here.
I think so, honestly, because that's probably more honest to what's actually happening here. I'm not casting any spells, I'm just pointing out a thing to the guy with the gun.
Yeah.
So,
you think your condition's a problem here?
I mean, I don't know if that's changed, really.
Yeah.
I feel like all this time, I'm really just nervous about what's happening up there.
So disadvantage with the minus one is brutal.
Yep. Let's go. Oh.
Wow.
That is a seven.
That's a seven.
That's a seven.
That's something.
That is quite handy. And so I think... God, there it is again. What happens here is you point out what looks like the most important, the root glyph, as you called it, and frantically tell Cassidy to shoot that out. And you're able to do so, but things lurch. There's a definite sense that the ritual began before being cut off. And... your breath is fogging in the air as it has remained quite chilly in here. But the Limehouse Lurker hisses at you and says, "You are like babes, pitiful and mewling, unaware of the world beyond your crib."
And I think I'm going to let that stand.
Excellent. Cassidy. Things feel weird. Things feel kind of funny. Maybe kind of funny the way they did after you had your hookup with Aisling. Things are a little sideways in here. And you're not entirely what's up with that. But you've shot the thing she pointed at. And now there's a vampire on the ground in front of you. I'm curious if you've got a solution to that problem.
Do I got a solution to that problem? I mean, the real question is, do I have a solution to it other than shooting it some more? Because that's always an option. That's always on the table.
It is. I do think something I want to note is it is technically daytime outside. There was some chatter of potentially taking advantage of that somehow, so that could be something to finally destroy the vampire. But I
that's so true.
Defer to y'all on that.
The tavern above is abandoned, right?
It is. The proprietor died horribly yesterday and dripped his blood onto your face and everything.
So if we like pinned this vampire down or something, and then maybe blew like a hole that would let the sunlight down.
Uh-huh.
That would be something.
Uh-huh.
Perhaps with some kind of crate of explosives.
Perhaps.
Is the crate of dynamite down here in the cave with you, or is someone blowing up the pub above?
Pythagoras, hit it.
I think the crate of TNT has been like selectively distributed.
Oh yeah, so this is where we see that there's daisy chained sticks of dynamite all along the path down here with little linked fuses. Uh-huh. Oh, that's delightful. What the hell do you...
We do need to get out of here before we hit that, though, maybe.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that might be a composure to avoid catching anything important, including yourself, what is functionally like a bunch of mine blasting. Like, this is so Wild West. I think that would probably be composure here.
Had to flush a bounty out like this once.
This vampire thought they were in, a lair, a cavern. No, they're in a mine.
I have some bad news for you, though, Cassidy.
Oh, no.
Little pale hand seizes your ankle and says, "I won't let you go," as you begin to bolt away. And I'm going to give you disadvantage for most beloved.
Damn, that makes sense. I'm mocking my crate of TNT to cancel that out. Thank you very much.
Phenomenal. So go ahead and give me a composure roll here. That's a plus one for you.
Okay. 2d6.
We haven't asked. What are you afraid is going to happen here?
What am I afraid is going to happen? I kill all of us.
What could possibly go wrong?
I kill all three of us with a gigantic cave-in is a really funny consequence to imagine. I don't know.
Not to put the worst stakes possible on the table, but...
I
never know.
I'm not sure I need...
Being realistic.
I'm not sure I need to top that necessarily. I think it's going to be a real problem if this goes sideways.
Let me backpedal a little bit. I'll kill at least one of us.
That's phenomenal.
And then you could upgrade to know all of you will die.
Yep.
Okay. 2d6 plus 1.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead and give me that roll.
It did not add my plus 1, so not that that would have helped me.
That takes you up to a crisp 6.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Well, good game, everyone. That was great playing with you.
So
really thought we'd be going further, but...
Cassidy, yeah, your contribution to Hargrave House here is you light this dynamite, the fuse races along the chain, and London is rocked by an earthquake, East London in particular, as the dog and whistle collapses into a sinkhole in the ground and becomes all of your graves, unless you don a mask here.
Which I think I'll do.
Thank you. You know,
funnily enough,
it'd be so funny if we have to pick up the night phase with three new characters.
Yeah.
It's like a fucking Spider-Man PS2 video of D just falls flat on the floor and the building explodes.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to go ahead and mock Mask of the Past again.
Phenomenal.
Which, my next one for that is narrate a flashback to the time after you finally went west that shows you happy and free. I think we see a train pulling up in a station somewhere much dustier and drier looking than wherever the Carver family estate was. And we see someone step off of it. I think this is probably not the Cassidy we know quite yet. This is still Sarah Carver, haircut a little shorter, probably wearing like much less fancy clothes. Stepping off this train, looking delighted, and I think they see, like, flyers for some kind of a traveling show, right? You know, shooting, horse riding, that kind of thing, and I think we cut immediately to them in the stands, still just looking, like, much happier than we've been in any of these other flashbacks.
And so,
lovely,
with your fond memories of falling in love with the West as you set this dynamite to blow,
mm-hmm.
I think instead you're able to pull your leg free of the lurker's grip. I'm going to give you a torn ankle.
Ouch.
But I think Cassidy is presumably shouting some as as everyone needs to vacate here suddenly very quickly. And it does thankfully seem like the lurker is disabled enough from its gut full of lead that they probably won't be able to follow. There's quite a ruckus coming from the hole as your companions are scampering out of it, Letitia. I think Alice Beale is now kind of in a daze. She's sort of happily sedated, almost like a well-fed pet after taking your blood, but seems pretty out of it here. I think I'm going to be cruel and ask our lovely explorer to explore our way out of here.
Yeah.
As the paths have all shifted, something is wrong with the spaces here because of that kind of abortive ritual. And so it's going to be hard to find your way out.
Well, luckily, if nothing else, I think this is actually something Letitia's quite familiar with doing. I think this navigating out of a fucked up supernatural space is probably actually a significant amount of what people kept her around for in the early days.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I would probably lean towards reason of, like, a mix of remembering the, like, not the path, but remembering the parts of the tunnel down, like, you know, this is where I saw that doll with a broken face. This is where we had to duck down low to get through this passage. And a mix of that and, like, just kind of experience with the supernatural sort of piece together a reasonable route out.
Excellent. I'll let you have reason here. I think one of your many conditions is going to be a problem, as you've lost a lot of blood.
She's looking awful pale.
You are really not looking too hot here. So I am going to need some disadvantage on this without an item.
I think my last item, from what I think of it, I don't think it really makes sense here. So I will not do that.
Alrighty. So
3d6.
3d6 plus 2, take lowest. Oh, we didn't establish what you're afraid is going to happen.
What I'm afraid is going to happen is... this is a fun one. Letitia does not believe that they will be lost. Letitia's confident she can find her way out. She's not confident she can find her way out in time. She's afraid they will be too late.
I think it's worse than that. I think you can probably lead them out. I think something is going to delay you. Which I know sounds not as bad, but trust me here. You're able to forge a path through here, these winding tunnels, sometimes crawling on hands and knees. And as you catch a whiff of fresh air and see what seems like the exit, somehow implausibly on the path, just forking off of it, you again see those little stairs that you saw down in kind of the trap layer. And there's also a little bit of light coming down from those, but it doesn't look like the sunlight from London. And I think that catches your eye for a moment, Letitia, as you linger and the others run ahead.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious what you do.
Yeah, I think she's a little delirious. I think without really meaning to. Like, she doesn't quite go up the stairs, but she'll go to them and, like, try to look up and, like, see if she can figure out what that light is.
I'm going to need you to take another condition.
Yeah. What's the condition?
I'm going to be a little kind here and say you can rewrite one of your existing conditions. I'm going to let you rewrite Bloodstained. And instead, I would like you to take The Sons of Another World. As your problems are no longer being a thing of hunger, that's already covered by a meal for Alice Beale now, I think. But you catch sight of something before you come to your senses and have to scurry away again. And as the dog and whistle shakes and shudders and begins to kind of fall into the ground, and you all come back into the comparatively bright light of the sun setting over London. I believe we've resolved the Limehouse Lurker.
Yay!
As he is, or it is quite entombed beneath all this rubble. And London never had another vampire ever again, it turns out. There were no more troubles or nothing.
Oh. All in a day's work.
But I do think we can probably follow up on a certain mask that got marked.
Mm-hmm.
So, Aisling had marked the moss-covered gate, right?
Yes. I had.
This text says at the start of the next day phase. So I actually get to wait on the full-blown introduction. And so instead what I'll say is, beneath this same sunset, a boat arrives. The camera stays focused on a little gangplank that's lowered as boots begin to cross it. And these are the shoes of women. These are long black skirts rustling around them. And a whole little procession of pairs of boots and skirts like this pass by, heading ashore.